5. In Scotland, Johnny delayed a meeting with the chiefs as long as he could. He was expecting discs and further progress from America, but Glen Cannon had not arrived. Finally, Robert the Fox, who had come up for the meeting from Africa, told him the chiefs were getting restless, so Johnny accompanied him. The house Chrissy had found was just by Castle Rock, and it was only a short walk. They didn't talk en route, eyeing the overcast sky above them. Two gillies, armed with Lochaber axes and blast rifles, let them into the entrance of an underground passage. The chiefs had found the remains of powder magazines and air raid shelters from some ancient wars, and had suspended reconstruction of their parliament house, and had refurbished the deep caverns instead. Mine lights burned in niches and cast the shadows of clan banners upon the domed roof. The chiefs were all there. They had been there for hours. But they gathered around and shook Johnny's hand and clapped him on the back. Finally, the chief of Clan Fergus brought the meeting to order. Robert the Fox played them some discs of the radio telescope intercepts. Aside from other items in them, the chiefs were amazed at the dissimilarity of faces in the combined force. They were also very interested in a game these creatures were playing by viewscreen. One of Robert's prisoners had identified it as Klep. Each player had a board of 6 sides and 6 different sets of pieces, and when one of them made a move, the other players would make the same move on their boards. The pieces were little spaceships and tanks and marines and soldiers, and they had different movements and were held down magnetically to a board of 616 hexagons. It wasn't the game that interested the chiefs, but the fact that the announced stakes were different items of loot from this planet. It sobered them. Then Robert told them about infrabeams, and that it would be unwise to discuss things out in the open. Sir Robert had gotten a full description of them from a Hockner prisoner. If you had to talk in the open, you should turn on an interference generator, but they didn't have those. The chiefs tried to pass a motion to forbid talking in the open air or telling people things they would then discuss in the open. It was also proposed that they begin a campaign with the slogan, "The enemy has long ears." But the chief of the Argyles took the floor and informed them that they could not pass legislation affecting all tribes, because they were not the government of all tribes. That was located over in America, even though they would be at war with it eventually. What they proposed was usurpation of the powers of state. This was Johnny's cue. He got up and reminded them that the first government actions had been taken by them up in the highlands, beside the lake and in the meadow, that they were the original legislative body. They must preserve the semblance of a government in America and not act as though that government didn't exist, for this would ruin his plans. But action must be taken to protect the people of the planet. This ruling body here controlled the World Federation for the Unification of the Human Race. He was sure that body would take their orders and ignore those from America. They could call their orders Federation orders, and they would be international in effect.
"Hear, hear," said Sir Andrew McNulty, head of the Federation.
Dunnel Dean, continued Johnny, was a titular prince of Scotland, named, he thought, after this very rock, Dunedin. He controlled the pilots, or could control them.
"Dunnel Dean and you control the pilots," the chief of the Campbells corrected him.
Johnny told them that this legislative body controlled the pilots. And the war chief of Scotland controlled all effective troops, omitting only the Brigantes. So in actual truth, it was this body that controlled the planet. If his argument prevailed with them, they should pass confidential resolutions to this effect and then make dispositions as they saw fit. They discussed it a bit and then so resolved it. Sir Andrew McNulty was to carry out their wishes with the tribes. Sir Robert was to execute their directives in the military sector. And due to the peculiarities of the situation, orders from the American governing body were to be ignored without creating suspicion. The American body had supported enemies of Scotland, enemies with whom Scotland had a blood feud. The present emergency required emergency actions. It was what Johnny wanted. Sir Robert then got up and described the spread-out character of the few people remaining on the planet, and put forth the principle that one must collect the population into a minimum number of strong points that could be defended. He had a plan that would do this. They wanted a summary of the situation as the MacTyler saw it. Since the MacTyler was part of and a member of every clan, and for innumerable other reasons, his estimate would be valued. Johnny privately had hoped to have further word from America before meeting such a question. So much depended on what Turl was doing, and there seemed to be a long blank period in which he had heard nothing. He was not going to give some of the data he needed to this body anyway, for he wanted no chance of leaks. But this body had quite a role to play. He rose and told them, A, they did not know for certain what had happened to Cyclo, and there was some possibility of a counterattack. B, the visitors were a heavy threat. He did not know why they were holding off, and it was worrisome. But they were buying time with it, and must be ready, and should work fast. And C, the primary concern, was the preservation of the people of Earth. They were not just endangered as a race. They could quite abruptly become extinct. They thanked him and passed Sir Robert's plan. They were very sober. There was other business. They called in Dr. Allen, who was deeply involved with Federation tribal movements. In his opinion, it was a danger to combine tribes and bring them too close together, due to the fact that their immunities to various diseases might have diminished. The tribes had long been separated from one another, and epidemics of smallpox or typhoid fever and other diseases could occur. He had several assistants. He had been flying about doing what he could. He had read all available man texts on vaccination, inoculation, sanitation, insect control, and such matters, and they had prepared serums. He wanted two measures. The first was compulsory isolation of every person who seemed to have signs of illness. The second was compulsory inoculation and vaccination. He was getting excellent cooperation from coordinators and tribal chiefs, but he wanted his program made official. The chiefs passed it as a Federation directive with their approval, and the order was to be issued by Sir Andrew McNulty. Then McAdam of the Planetary Bank was ushered in. He had requested an audience with the chiefs for three reasons. Short and gray-haired and conservative, McAdam was very courteous to them and very precise. He had a portfolio of papers, and he put it down on the table. To begin with, that government in America was throwing money around and creating local inflation, which could then spread to other areas. The Briganti troops were being paid 100 credits a day, each one. There were supposed to be about 760 of them, and this made 76,000 credits a day, which was about double the yearly budget of most other tribes. They didn't value the money, threw it around in the streets. There was not much to buy in America now, and no product to absorb the funds. He was not there without a solution. He wanted authority from somewhere to issue a special American banknote, which could then devaluate against the currency of the rest of the world. He had reason to believe the government there would accept it if the issue omitted the picture of Tyler and replaced it with one of Brown Limper Staffer for that issue. The caption would be, Brown Limper Staffer, Senior Mayor, Planet Earth. In his opinion, the omission of the Tyler picture would also cause the currency to further deflate in value, but he didn't think Tyler should be on a devalued issue. What did they think? Tyler smiled. The chiefs laughed and gave McAdam their blessing. McAdam wanted more than that. He wanted a second charter, much like the first, but from this body. It wouldn't be publicly displayed, but he wanted it in his safe. They read it and passed it. Then McAdam objected to some private, preliminary discussions he had had with Sir Robert to the effect that he should move his bank from Zurich to Luxembourg. It was inconvenient and difficult. They would also have to move presses and find staff housing in Luxembourg. The chiefs called on Sir Robert. He told them that there was a Cyclo mine site at Luxembourg, where the Cyclos had gotten their local planetary iron supplies. Close by it was a fortress from ancient times. In fact, Luxembourg meant little fortress. It had been a crossroads of banking and trade for a couple of thousand years. It was a temporary measure. Luxembourg could be defended. Zurich could not be. They told McAdam he better move. McAdam resignedly said he would. But he had another matter, and that was the expenses of war preparation. Certain costs were being incurred that were not covered by tribal budgets or guaranteed by tribal lands. He had a solution to it, which was to make loans against something else. Johnny asked to speak. He said he knew of quite a few mineral deposits. He did not say how he knew. And once things were calm again, they could be mined. They were quite extensive. They knew his earlier connection with mining and should be able to take his word for it. These could serve as a loan guarantee if held as property of the chiefs and not of tribes. McAdam said, did they know Brown Limper claimed to own the whole planet? The chief said they knew of that. Also, that he claimed to own the whole Earth branch of intergalactic mining. The chief of Clan Fergus said that, valid or not, part of such deeds belonged to them, and they would pledge their share of these mineral deposits to guarantee the war expenses. McAdam had a quiet smile. He knew which way the wind blew. He accepted that. He would not violate their confidence. The chiefs passed a resolution to that effect and gave Sir Robert the right to draw against this open account at his discretion as a war chest. Much later, it was a very sober group that broke up. Gillies escorted Johnny to his door. Chrissy was up and waiting for him and served him some tea and what she said were crumpets. Legs stretched out, shirt thongs unlaced, feet in soft moccasins, Johnny sat in the drawing room. He was worried about events in America, but he forced his attention onto domestic things. Chrissy was telling him that the parson and Aunt Ellen would be here for lunch tomorrow, and she hoped he would be at home. Aunt Ellen was doing so well here in Scotland. Her cheeks had filled out, and she had lost a cough she had had. She was looking quite young, really. Johnny said you could say that about Chrissy. She looked very pretty with her long corn-silk hair piled up on top in a big puff. Her eyes were brighter and blacker. Her tunic cloth that had been made into a gown set off her figure even better than buckskin. The collar scars had almost vanished. Chrissy blushed over the compliments he gave her. Patty was better. She had gotten terribly thin. She was still in bed from her fever, but it had subsided, leaving her weak. Johnny should visit her in the morning. The only worry was that Patty did not seem to take any interest in anything. Maybe Johnny could tell her a story about something. Johnny asked whether the house had a basement, and she said yes, a strong, deep one. Johnny told her she had found some very nice furniture, and if things got rough, she should put the better pieces in the basement, well protected. And did she have a safe place in the underground shelters at Castle Rock? Chrissy said she had thought of all that, and he mustn't worry about her. She had been around in the world now, and had her share of experience. And wouldn't he like some more of this tea, and another crumpet? He found it all very pleasant. It was a lovely old house, so different from those decayed ruins in the old village. If they could just win through somehow, and if his luck held, maybe someday the rather remarkably pleasant fact of sitting in this drawing room and talking about calm matters with Chrissy or friends would become routine. Then the gong at the door was struck, and Chrissy went to open it. With a shout, Johnny jumped up to greet Glenn Cannon.